Okay. All right, I'm gonna start. Hello, everyone. Hello. Oh, I'll just start. Right, okay, so yesterday I introduced Bayesian networks, which is a compact way of representing everything that a joint probability distribution table would tell you. It consists of a DAG, which is nodes, with arcs, and on each node represents a random variable in your domain, and it's decorated with a conditional probability table, which gives the probability of each possible value of that random variable on that node, given some combination of values on its parents, the parents being the immediate ancestors in the DAG to that node. And I showed you how that is sufficient to estimate the probability of any joint combination of variables, values to the variables. But how hard, and we also talked about some standard representations of conditional probability tables, right? That even within a given CPT, things aren't, you know, arbitrary. You have, for example, Gaussian distributions are very common for continuous variables. Noisy OR is one way of dealing with possible conditional distributions over discrete variables. And of course, there was the logical guise as well. But so we've got these Bayesian networks. We've got their conditional probabilities. How hard is inference within a Bayesian network? And what do I mean by inference anyway? So that's what we're going to talk about today. Okay. Now, this is what inference is. In any probability, whenever you're talking probabilities, basically you're trying to answer the following question. You're interested in the value of some query variable X or combination thereof. But you can't observe the value of X directly. Okay. However, you do have some evidence that you can observe, which is this little value E. And so what you're trying to do is estimate what's the value of X given the evidence I've got, this value E. And there may be other variables lying around that are hidden, but nevertheless influence the way in which E influences X. And so you need to consider those other hidden variables Y in your calculation, even though ultimately you don't care what value they have. Okay. So with that burglary example, the alarm example I gave yesterday where, you know, you've got an alarm and it goes off if there's a burglary or an earthquake, and if it goes off, John or Mary calls, or at least they promise to call. An example query would be, what's the chances of a burglary given that both John and Mary have called? And in fact, here's the answer. So this is the probability that there is a burglary. Here's the probability that there isn't, okay? Given this evidence. But of course, this evidence you need to consider when calculating it, we're going to see, you need to consider the values of other variables, okay? So, but that's what inference is. That's what we want to do. That's the task, all right? Now the question is, how do you do it, okay? Now what I'm going to talk about today is exact algorithms for computing the value of a query variable, given what's known as, it's called a posterior probability, in the sense that you are estimating the degree or confidence to which you believe a given value of the query variable given some of the evidence that you have observed. So in general, it's going to be quite different from your prior belief in that query in the absence of any evidence. That's what posterior means here. Okay, we'll talk about approximate methods next week. And approximate methods actually turn out to be pretty important, because exact inference with Bayesian networks, as they get bigger and bigger on the number of nodes, becomes intractable. All right, so here's the first method, and it's called inference by enumeration. And you won't be surprised, and it's called inference by enumeration because basically it involves doing marginalization, summing out all the possible values of the hidden variables you don't care about, okay? So Bayes' rule tells you this, right? The conditional probability of X given my evidence E is some normalizing factor of their joint probability, right? That's just Bayes' rule. In fact, alpha will be 1 over probability of the evidence, okay? And this thing, given one of the axioms of probability theory, is equal to the sum of these joint probability, this joint probability distribution, where I'm summing over every possible value y of my hidden variable y about which I don't care. Okay. Now, since a Bayesian network gives you a complete representation of this thing, you should be able to work this out, right? This big summation here over the joint probabilities. You can work that out. Okay. For our example, this very abstract thing becomes this. If the query we're interested in is there a burglary, given that John and Mary have called, which algebraically is the same as this guy, right? I'm interested in this probability distribution over the value of my random variable B, given John's called and Mary's called. Then I plug in the values of all my other hidden variables into this Y, and in fact there are two of them, the earthquake and the alarm. Let me just remind you what it looks like. It looks like this, right? And there is the joint probability of all the stuff, still with a big B, right? Because I'm after the probability distribution on B, okay? All right, so this is the big fat thing, big fat summation that I've got to work out, okay? Any questions so far? Okay. All right. So recall, however, that this you can do better than this, right? Now let's use the conditional independence to actually factor this into a product of probabilities that we can read off the conditional probability tables in the Bayesian network. In other words, I want to simply be able to call these numbers in these probability distributions, okay? All right, so where are we? We're up here. Recall that the joint probability of all your variables is basically the product of the probability of the value of each node given its parents, the value on the parents, okay? And we can use the conditional probability tables to simplify this. Basically, it turns out to be this, okay? That's the joint probability distribution of this guy, right? You start with burglaries and earthquakes because they're at the root of the node, right? Whoops. Then you look at the value of alarm given the values you've set for burglary and earthquake, and then the value of John and Mary given the alarm, given their parents, which is just the alarm, okay? So that's all the nodes enumerated, conditioned on their parents. It's the product of them, okay? Now, we've got two sums here, one over the value of earthquake, one over the value of the alarm. Those are the two random variables we have to marginalize out because in our original query, we don't care about the values of those. I only care if there's a burglary, okay? And so there are some things here that don't mention E or A, for example, this probability of B. So I can take that thing and go whoop outside those sums. It doesn't make any difference. That's just basic maths. This E guy doesn't mention A, right? The probability of E doesn't mention A, so that can go whoop in between these sums, right, like that. And the rest mention both, either both E and A or A, so they have to stay where they are after this summation sign for A, okay? Now, it does help to do this, because it means that you're sort of cycling through fewer products of probabilities that you're going to sum, ultimately. Okay? So computationally, this is a useful thing to do. Now, to compute this, then, what you've got to do is loop through all these variables, varying your value for E, varying your value for A, getting the products, computing the products, and adding them up. Okay? That's the enumeration, variable enumeration algorithm, basically loops over this thing. that looks like this. I'll show you in a minute graphically what the computation looks like, what the calculation looks like. Here's our example, right, with all the probabilities decorated here. This is the same example as yesterday. And what we want to do is plug in the numbers. We know these numbers. For each possible value of B, E, and A, the values of J and M being fixed, because they're all, you can just read them directly off these little tables, right? So, here's what you do. I wish I had two projectors, it's really annoying. Okay, so if you look at the original summation, basically what you do in this algorithm is you start out here, right? You start to the left of your equation, and there's no summation here, there's just the probability of B. So what you do is you're creating this tree with sum nodes and product nodes. Since I start here, the first thing I do is put the probability of B. That's 0.001, according to this thing, right? Here it is, 0.001, okay? That's for a positive B, okay? The negative B I can just work out with 1 minus, right? Now, the next thing you encounter, on this equation is a summation. So what you do at that node where you land after writing this probability is you write a sum node. And what you're now going to do is move on from there. Moving on from there is the probability of E. So I'm creating two branches out of that sum node because there are two possible values for E. E's being a Boolean variable. One is E, one is not E. So that creates two branches like this, decorated with the probabilities, respectively, of E and not E. Now, E is going to take this value at all lower branches beneath this subtree, and not E is going to be a not E value at all branches below this subtree. Okay? Right. Now, so that's that bit dealt with. Now we get another summation, which means that at each leaf of your tree, you're going to branch out again with another addition node. And A being a Boolean variable means that each of those sum nodes, again, is going to branch into two. Okay? So there they are, right? That's where you ended up after your P, E, and P not E. They're both sum nodes, and they both branch into two. This one is going to be an A branch. This one's going to be a not A branch, which means that this is an AE branch, and this is a not AE branch. This is an A not E branch, and this is a not A not E branch, okay? And then you just keep going, right? The rest is just products. So you just keep expanding the tree with your products, right? And decorating each of them, right? So that's the tree. Then what you do is you compute the products and you sum. So here you start going bottom up now as you're doing the calculation. I go product, 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 and then I sum them. Turns out to be whatever it is, I don't know. Then product, 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 sum them. Sum them, product, and I'm at the top, right? So you just work compositionally up the tree. Any questions? Any observations?
At the end, you get a smaller value than the first edge, right?
Then sorry, say that again.
You get a much
bigger probability, posterior probability for the burglary than the prior, which is 0.001. Yeah. So this is your prior belief that there's a burglary. This is the extent to which you'll believe there's a burglary in the absence of any evidence at all, right? In other words, you're pretty confident there's no burglary in the absence of evidence for it. But John and Mary calling really is pretty strong evidence for it because it increases your posterior probability by an order of magnitude. It goes up to whatever it was, 0.27 or something. It's quite a bit more. So you now believe it basically 200 times more than you did before. Any questions? Yeah. Of course. Then it makes sense, yeah? Yeah. Okay? All right. So Any observations about this, first of all? Anyone? Yeah.
The lower branches keep repeating.
Yes, you keep wasting your time, right? Okay, because I'm working, you know, bottom up on this thing, I keep computing similar products again and again. So this branch here is identical to this one, yeah? And this branch here is identical to this one. Now, that's not too bad, you know, repeat yourself twice. But as Bayesian networks get bigger, that repetition becomes really debilitating because it massively increases. And in fact, the smaller the amount of evidence on which you're basing your query, the more the repetition as well, because the more you're marginalizing out other variables, and the more summations you're doing, and the fewer products you're dealing with, you know, just bona fide products rather than marginalization. So, you know, it means that the tree has a larger branching factor because each one of these additions produces branches. And this is a binary, a domain consisting entirely of binary values. The minute you get variables with 25 values, it's again trouble. Okay, so we need to avoid that repetition. And the algorithm that does that, but still stays within the realm of exact inference, in other words, it's not approximating the answer, it's giving you the exact mathematically correct answer given the Bayesian network, is the variable elimination algorithm. So what that does, the basic idea is that whenever you calculate something, you store it just in case you need it again, somewhere else in the big fat summation equation. Okay? It works bottom up by evaluating the sub-expression. So here's the big fat probability thing that we need to work out given our query, okay? We're marginalizing out, as before, these two variables for earthquake and alarm, okay? Taking the conditional probabilities of all the nodes given their parents, all right? Now, what you do is you take each one of these probabilities in the product and you name it. You call it a factor. And the arguments to the factor are going to be those random variables that vary in value in this part of the equation. So for example, this probability of M given A, only A varies because the value of M is fixed. That's an evidence variable. I'm assuming Mary called. There's nowhere in this equation where Mary calling is false. It's always true. So M is fixed, but A is varying because I'm summing over that guy. Okay? So this is factor, and I've just subscripted it to make it unique, but the argument is over A. Similarly for the John calling given the alarm, only the alarm is varying in this guy. Here, the alarm, burglary, and the earthquake are going to vary. The alarm and earthquake, because they're hidden variables that I'm marginalizing out. The burglary, because I'm after its probability distribution. Okay, so I care about the true and false. Okay? Here, earthquake varies, right, in this little guy. And here, the burglary varies because I'm after the probability distribution. So what we've got here is five probabilities. I've labeled them with five factors, and to each one, I've given the arguments of those things within the probability it's sort of naming that vary in value as you compute this equation. Okay, any questions so far? Now, what a factor is, in fact, is a matrix in which you are storing all the relevant probabilities while you vary the value of these things that vary, right, within the argument of the factor. So for example, this one is going to be a 2x1 matrix because the only thing that's varying is A, and that has two possible values. So it's going to be a 2x1 matrix, in other words, a tuple, right? One is the probability of Mary calling given the alarm is true, the other of Mary calling given the alarm is false. The same with this. This one, on the other hand, is going to be 2x2x2. Because alarm is varying and it has two possible values, burglary is varying, it has two possible values, and earthquake is varying and it has two possible values. Okay? So you store these guys in a matrix. What you're doing, really, is just rejigging these conditional probability tables into a bunch of matrices that suit your needs for making this calculation. Any questions so far? Okay. Now what do you do? I mean, that's useless if you stop there, right? But the thing is that it makes calculation a little bit faster because, for example, I'm only ever going to calculate this product, this guy once in my calculation and this guy once, even though on this enumeration algorithm they're repeated twice and they're therefore both calculated twice. All right, so here's how it goes. You replace the probabilities with the matrices. Okay, so it looks like that. And the first thing you do is you're summing out A. So you start here rather than here, right? The variable enumeration algorithm started on the left-hand side of the equation. This time you're starting on the right-hand side, okay, with your factor fives and fours and threes, okay? And the way you sum out, the way you calculate this sum is by a thing called pointwise product. And I will tell you what a pointwise product over a matrix is in a minute. It is not, crucially, not matrix multiplication, okay? It's a different thing. I will tell you what it is in a minute. But basically, you do this pointwise product, and what it does is it creates a new factor where A is not part of it at all. Okay? This pointwise product basically gets rid of A and creates a new matrix, which is going to be 2 by 2. And basically it looks like that. Okay? Where each one of these is a pointwise product. So it's a sum of a pointwise product. So then what you're left with is this. Fewer factors, and actually in this case smaller matrices for the one you end up with, given the size of this was 2 by 2 by 2, you end up with a 2 by 2 here. You do the same thing again to sum out your E. You basically do the sum of the pointwise products on these individual matrices with the values of E varying accordingly. And that gives you a new matrix, which will be 2 by 1, given that B can have 2 possible values. And this new matrix is only varying in the value you get for B. And in fact, using the fact that F1B is the probability distribution of B, you get this thing, and then it's just pointwise product again, and you're done. Okay? All right. What is pointwise product? Well, what that does is, notice how with these things, we are basically, there are common variables among these three factors. I mean, take these two guys. There are common variables among them. The pointwise product is always between two factors that have some non-empty intersection among the variables. And what you do to get the pointwise product is you fix the values of the y's, the intersections, to be the same, okay? So here's an example. It's best to do it with an example. Suppose I want to work out the pointwise product of F1 and F2 to get this one, F, over A, B, and C. Then what I'm interested in, if this is A, B, and C, there's going to be 8 possible values, right? It's a 2 by 2 by 2 matrix. But what I'm sort of multiplying together here on these figures must always agree in their value of B. So I'm never going to multiply, for example, F1 when A is true and B is true with F2 when B is false and C is some other value, right? You never mix the value of B, that non-empty intersection. So to get the value of this factor when all three are true, what you're doing is you're multiplying the F1 when A is true and B is true with the F2 when B is true and C is true, because that's what matches the values on here, right? And so on and so on. Okay? That's what pointwise product is. It's nothing to do with matrix multiplication, right? Where it's, you know, you're sort of going, multiply these things, then that, then that, then that, and you sum them. And that's your answer in the top left-hand corner. It doesn't work like that, okay? All right, so those are the pointwise products. And of course, ultimately, you're then So this would be how you'd work out these things, right? That equation, and then you sum the answers. And it's a pointwise sum, okay? All right, so let's sort of go through this example then. When summing out, basically the trick is that any factor does not depend on the variable to be summed out because I got rid of it, okay? So when summing out, you know, you're doing this pointwise sum, like I said, but remember, as before, whenever you're, before you start doing the calculations, take any factor that, you know, doesn't depend on the thing you're summing out and go flip and stick it to the right of the sum, okay? It still saves time to do that, okay? So here's what happens then with our query. What is this query? Oh, it's another example, actually. It's the distribution of how likely is John to call given that there's been a burglary, okay? So again, we're marginalizing out earthquake and alarm, but we also now have to marginalize out the random variable for Mary calling as well. So this first line is just marginalization. The second line is the conditional independence assumptions given by the Bayesian network combined with Bayes' theorem. Okay. The third line is where I've given my factors. Okay. So this thing is going to be a 2 by 1 because it's varying only in the value of E. This is going to be 2 by 2 because it's varying in the values of A and E, not of B because that's my fixed value, that's my evidence variable. And this is varying in the values of J and A. This thing is not varying at all because the sum of the summing over the values of M given the alarm for any given value of alarm sums to 1. So I can get rid of it, right? For each sort of product, that's always going to be 1. Right? So I'm going to have fat product plus fat product, and in each of those products, this summation, you know, when I'm saying summing over A, right, this summation is always 1 for any given value of A. Yeah? So it's 1. I can get rid of it. Boom. So what I've got left then is 3 factors, a 2 by 1, a 2 by 2, and a 2 by 2. Okay? So you then do your pointwise product plus summation to get a new factor out of these two guys, which is going to vary in its values of J and E. You do the same thing again to marginalize out E. You take the pointwise product of these, making sure your pointwise product always you're multiplying together things with the same value of E, right? And which will produce something that will be 2 by 1 again once you've summed out, because it's only going to vary in the value of J, okay? So it's called the variable elimination algorithm for obvious reasons, okay? You're gradually, what you're doing is you're mutating your matrices and getting rid of varying stuff, okay? So what's left are never ancestors of queries or evidence variables. It's only the query variable that you get left with ever. Okay, and this will be a 2 by 1, whatever it is. I haven't worked it out here. I haven't done the numbers, but you could do that as an assignment. Okay, I'm going to stop there because maths fries the brain, especially on Friday afternoon. And you should go out and get some fresh air and a strong cup of coffee to recover. Are there any questions? Okay, see you next week.
Thank you. Yeah. And then we retrieve. And then they
check.
Thank you.